Welcome back to Brief and Not So Brief. I'm Seth.
I'm Ethan.
And this time we're going to be talking about A24 films. So, this is our first episode that we're recording with Ethan out of state now in Texas.
Indeed.
So, in a bit of lockdown.
Yeah.
Not really the reason you went to Texas, but, you know, things happen. And in any case, it makes it so that Ethan has some more time on his hands to watch movies and to record podcasts with his old man. So, Ethan had sent me a couple lists of things to talk about. And one of the things that he listed was A24 films, because he had been looking over the list and seen that we had both seen quite a few of them. Well, not quite a few of them, a few of them. And so we thought we would get together and talk about those films that we'd seen. We did notice that there were a few that we didn't have in common. And so each of us recommended, well, you should watch this one and I'll watch this one. And then we'll talk about all of that. And then we still have a couple ones that aren't in common that, you know, I can talk about the ones that I've seen that you haven't, and you can talk about the one that you've seen that I haven't. So, do you want to just do this in chronological order?
Sure.
Okay. Well, what's the list of films that we have both seen?
Yeah. So out of the many A24 films, we have The Lighthouse, Midsummer, Good Time, Ex Machina, Uncut Gems, and Locke. Those are all the ones that we've seen together. I believe we've seen, I think we saw most of these like in the same room together. I think two of them we saw separately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a good company, good films.
Yeah. So when we looked over the list originally, Ethan hadn't seen Ex Machina and I hadn't seen Midsummer. So we both watched those.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one film that you've seen that I haven't, though you thought I had.
Yeah, I've seen Moonlight and you haven't. And then you've seen Eighth Grade. You've seen
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yeah. What else?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Yep. So what we'll do is we'll talk through these and just kind of give you our brief reviews of each of these. This is more films than we've typically covered in a brief review.
Yeah, so we're going to be going rapid fire here.
Yeah. Well, where do you want to start?
You said chronological, so let's just do that.
Okay. So then I think it's Locke.
Yeah.
Is the earliest one. This is one of the more recent ones that we saw together, actually.
Yeah, I think this may have been, I think this kind of actually started our kind of, we didn't really watch, say, a trend of A24 films, mm-hmm. but I think we saw that on Netflix and we're like, hey, I've heard this is solid and interesting. Let's watch it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was definitely a unique style of filmmaking. I knew going into it just because I had heard of this, it was described to me as Tom Hardy's in a car. And mm-hmm. so that's like what I knew about going into it, but it's just kind of an interesting kind of, I guess, journey with a man over the course of what is it supposed to be like an hour, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Isn't the length of the movie like the actual length of the drive?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And so you kind of just go through this emotional journey with him in an unconventional way, which was interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I had this one on the list for potential episodes that we could do where it's like just one person.
Mm-hmm.
Or mostly focusing on one person, because this one really, I mean, other than voices that you hear, it's just Tom Hardy on the screen.
Yeah.
That's kind of fascinating.
You know, what's also kind of fascinating.
What's it?
That obviously its budget was probably low, but I looked it up. It was a $2 million budget. You got,
yeah.
You know, that kind of is pretty obvious that it would be so low just because it's a guy in a car with voices. And so that's just kind of fun to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just kind of follow him through the events of a couple of hours where, I mean, I don't really feel sorry for the guy, right? He cheated on his wife, got a lady pregnant, and at the last minute, you know, he has found out that she's giving birth tonight, and so he's heading to be there for the birth of his child. And there's reasons for that, because it kind of goes through his relationship with his father, because he keeps kind of looking in the rearview mirror and talking as if his father is back there. And his mm-hmm. father had walked out on him and his mother. So I get that he's an honorable character in a way, but, you know, he could have revealed what had happened earlier. If he was really honorable, mm-hmm. he could have told his wife about it.
Yeah, he had he wanted to keep his moral compass, I guess, of trying to, he had like a moral obligation to do it. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, it's almost like he's breaking that moral obligation to his wife. And so it's kind of ironic in that sense.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a compelling movie, which is surprising for one where a guy is just making phone calls from his car as he's mm-hmm. driving.
Yeah.
I'd be curious what the accent is that he's using, because it's not normal Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about the regional dialects in the UK to mm-hmm. know.
Yeah. I think it's a solid film. Nothing. I would say it's the weakest out of this list just because it doesn't have anything besides for the uniqueness of it being in a confined, you know, one car and just some voices. But there's a lot of other things I look for in film that unfortunately the nature of this just can't have. And so that's why it's probably the weakest for me.
But I think it's still on Netflix, so it's available to watch. Okay, how about Ex Machina? This is the one, like I mentioned, that I had already seen that you had not.
Yes.
So what did you think?
I don't know why I like the movie, but I just do. mm-hmm. Like, I think it's really good. I think it's got some interesting, thought-provoking ideas about AI. I also love Oscar Isaac, and so whenever you get to see him dance, you know, that's a positive. I found that, I mean, in a sense, this is also a pretty confined place because it's a complex, well, his house, but it's his research facility. It's two guys and basically one girl, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of just this interesting back and forth between Donald Gleason's character, Caleb, and Ava. And I guess just the idea of bringing someone in to basically test the AI, but doing it in a face-to-face manner. Because like he said in the movie, you know, if we did it on voice alone, she would pass the Turing test. Mm-hmm. But having to do it with that face-to-face nature, and like he can obviously see that she's a robot, but he's still able to like almost question it and think that this could pass as human. And so it's just kind of crazy to think about how far it could go if it could ever get to this level. It's it's a classic, you know, just let's talk about AI and what it can do in the future. Cause you know, a lot of movies do that now.
Yeah. I like the moment in the film where Caleb starts to question if he might be a robot.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Where he starts cutting and like looking in his eye and stuff.
Yeah. 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 That was kind of crazy. But yeah, like you said, this is similar to Locke, right? There's not many people in it. Mm-hmm. And because it's just Donald Gleason and Oscar Isaac and Alicia Vikander.
Just talking, pretty much.
Yeah, just talking. And then there's also Kyogo there, but she doesn't speak.
Yeah.
But she's an undeniable presence in the film, even so, especially given what happens in the climactic moment.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people praise Donald Gleason for his American accent, and I don't like it.
I don't think it's very good.
I think it's fine in this one, but in something like The Revenant, he's in that, and he's playing a Civil War era, you know, major or something. Mm-hmm. And my problem with his American accent is it doesn't sound like it's from anywhere. It's just like generic American, and there's no character to it. As opposed to like, if you look in that same movie, you have Tom Hardy, who's clearly from somewhere. But you haven't seen The Revenant yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay. Oh, that'd be a good one for us to do at some point. Yeah. Ex Machina, I mean, content warning for this one. This one does have some, it has some violence in it. It has quite a bit of very, not blasé nudity. It's not in the context of being, it's not supposed to be titillating.
It's interesting because I found myself when she was replacing her, like taking the skin off of the robot, putting it on herself.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like nudity at all.
Right.
Like I knew it was, but it didn't feel like it. And that was a weird sensation.
Yeah. Yeah. That was strange. And obviously more language in this one. Locke is a much more family friendly film, sort of.
Yeah.
Although it's sort of. It's not fun for the whole family either.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good. I do think that there's a lot of different actors that could have done the Caleb part better. Mm-hmm. It's not that Don Gleason's a bad actor. I just didn't find his character as compelling. I found Nathan's character much more complex.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's part of the point, right? Mm-hmm. Caleb isn't actually special.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but you know, it's a good movie. I like the way it ends. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. Yeah,
I do like that as well. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'm a little frustrated about with it is that they didn't do a ton of stuff with the score until the very end, and it was really good at the end. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it could have been used a lot more because I know who Alex Garland's you know, music and score guy is. Mm-hmm. And he's done some phenomenal stuff. And so it's like, I want more of that because I feel like that really helps the filmmaking and the tension.
Yeah.
And so I just wish there could have been a little bit more of that within reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking over this list and realizing that it's basically all downer endings.
Yeah.
Not totally, but because there's something in each of them that you can be like, okay, but, you know, it's not a complete downer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could talk about that in each of them. I mean, for Locke, it's just the, you know, he goes to see the birth and it's born, and then his wife divorces him or leaves him.
Tells him not to come home.
Yeah. So he misses both. He misses the one thing he was going for and then misses the other thing he knew he was going to lose, mm-hmm. but now he didn't even have a reason for it.
Yeah.
And then in this one, it's just, you know, Ava was outsmarting and outwitting. She was doing the survivor. She outplayed and outsmarted everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. All right. How about Good Time?
Yes. I really like this one.
So this is a Safdie Brothers movie, and this is one of the more recent ones that we've seen as well.
Yeah.
I feel like, we've seen all the movies that we've seen on this list, we've seen in the last year, right?
Not the last year, like the last, I'd say, 3 months.
Yeah. Other than Ex Machina for me, I haven't seen that in a couple of years. Okay. So Good Time. Yeah. This is one that you had wanted to watch for a long time. Did we watch this one together or had you already watched it? Okay.
We watched it together and it's filmmaking, it's score, you know, all that good stuff. That was pretty unique from Uncut Gems.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those movies where, you know, if you've only seen Robert Pattinson in something like Twilight, you know, you might be surprised to find that he can actually act.
Yeah.
It's a, similar to Uncut Gems, which we have talked about previously, in that it's tense. You know, it mm-hmm. will make you uncomfortable. But I feel like it's focusing on not nicer people necessarily, but better people in some ways, where this guy just wants to look out for his brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want his brother to have to be in a, you know, a home. And so you can kind of root for him a little bit. But there's some pretty uncomfortable stuff that happens in it when he starts kissing on the girl that they, I'm not, how did they get into that house?
Because he was like nice to them at the hospital or something. I can't remember.
Right. Yeah. It's a compelling watch. And it's one that you can be like, okay, yeah, I hope he gets away with it. Sort of, kind of, but
mm-hmm.
then you can also be kind of like, yeah, he should have gotten caught and he should go to jail.
Yeah. I like the ending in this one too, because mm-hmm. I like how he, I mean, I wish they had kind of at the end when it shows his brother going to that basically class for other people like him, they ask like a couple questions and he doesn't move. And then it was like, mm-hmm. have you ever had someone think you did something when you didn't or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the wording was. And then what the drill was, like they would walk across the room and he walks. And I kind of wish they had ended the film right there because I think that's a really powerful ending.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it's kind of implied that he loves his brother and that he got him into that good place. Even though he had to eventually go to jail. And Pattinson's character.
Yeah. This one was also on Netflix, right?
Yes.
I think, was Ex Machina also on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. 3 for 3 so far. Mm-hmm. All right. So next, The Lighthouse.
Yes.
This is one of those ones that you know, we kind of wanted to go see in the theater and we never got around to it. And that would have been interesting.
It's just because the nature of A24 films is that they're independent kind of art house films. But this was like the highest version of, this was like peak A24 for me. Like this is exactly right. What I think of when I think of independent and art house. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of limited release. I had seen the trailer and, you know, Willem Dafoe is really good, but I think he's very, even though he gets a lot of attention, I think he's still underrated. Like he deserves a lot of attention. I think he's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a very showy performance in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, and we're constantly quoting here. You're fond of me lobster. I see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is definitely the artiest film so far on this list.
Yeah.
Because I feel like after watching it, I was like, so did any of that really happen? Is this, are we supposed to take it literally? Is it supposed to be strongly metaphorical? And I think it has to be, you know, there has to be some kind of mythological element to it. Mm-hmm. And I could tie it into some stuff that I took a mythology class in high school, and I was always interested in Greek myth and classical mythology. So there's some stuff in it where I'm like, okay, that was interesting. And particularly the way it ends, you're like, okay. but in a lot of ways, it's just a spectacular film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't give you all the answers. It lets you, it just kind of burrows into your brain and makes you think about it.
Yeah.
And it's another one that's very small scale in terms of the number of people in it, because it's basically mm-hmm. just Arpatz and Willem Dafoe. They do pass a couple other people at some point, and I wondered if it was actually still them.
It was, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if it was a metaphor for purgatory or something.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking about was the shots in this film. Almost every single of these movies have some sort of significant face shot. Like at the very mm-hmm. end, it kind of zooms in on him just like screaming, I guess. It's a weird shot. Mm-hmm. But like all the rest of the movies on here have some sort of significance, with the last shot or one of the shots being a zoom in on someone's face very slowly. Yeah. And it's just kind of an interesting kind of underlying similarity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is one of those ones where, like, if you're not into arty films, you don't want to go anywhere near this one.
Yeah.
you know, it will turn you off. But if you do like that, and you like especially very physical films, because I feel like the performances here for Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe are very strongly physical. The way they hold themselves, the way they move. There's that scene with the, whatever the bird is, seagull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where
seabird.
Yeah. Where he grabs it and just flogs the crap out of it. That's fantastic. There's that amazing monologue from Willem Dafoe where you can tell that he's trying not to blink, and he mm-hmm. doesn't blink, and you can see his eyes beginning to water. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also a lot of dancing and a lot of drinking.
Yes.
And so I think it's, even though it's a very dark and kind of, I don't even know, just like very bleak film, it's kind of hilarious in some ways too. Mm-hmm. And so I honestly think that this is probably the one that's the most divisive. Like you said, if you like Our House, you'll love it. If you aren't quite sure, you'll probably hate it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's definitely the one I'd recommend the most for the right crowd.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of which, why don't we talk about Uncut Gems?
Yes, sir.
I mean, I skipped over Midsommar just because that was one that we didn't watch together. So Uncut Gems we saw in the theater. It gave me a headache. Mm-hmm. The idea of going back and rewatching it gives me anxiety, because it's such an anxiety-driven movie. It's so chaotic. I'm just not sure I could subject myself to it again, but it was tremendous. So that's the crazy thing.
Yeah. I think you like this one a little bit more than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually rewatched this one and I liked it a little bit more upon rewatch. Mm-hmm. I gained a little bit more respect for Sandler's performance and liked it. Mm-hmm. I also thought that the score worked better. The reason that I think the score works the second time is because I hadn't heard a score quite like that, except for the first time I saw it. So I saw that, I saw Good Time. So after I kind of understood what the score is, kind of what, where its place and where it belongs, it mm-hmm. made me appreciate it more the second rewatch. But yeah, I think it's a solid film, but very, very anxiety inducing.
Yeah. Okay. So how about we talk about Midsommar?
Yeah.
So this one you just watched the other day, right?
I did.
And that was with your roommate and his girlfriend?
Yeah. Well, it was between that and Hereditary. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm down to watch both, because before I watched that, I didn't know we were going to do the A24 episode. But mm-hmm. in my head, I was like, okay, they're both A24. They're both Ari Aster. Like,
yeah,
it's good either way. And then we watched the trailers and they're like, let's go with Midsommar. And in my head, like, I already knew a little bit about it. I was like, oh, these guys have no idea what's about to happen to them. They yeah. have no idea what's about to get dumped on them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the girlfriend she enjoyed it, because she actually, her and my roommate Andrew both appreciated the film, but she had a hard time with it because this is a long freaking movie, and it takes a long time to decide we're going to drop the bomb or we're going to drop another one. Okay, now we're going to drop a freaking nuke. Like, it takes its time, which I appreciate. I was never bored because this is one of the best directed films I've ever seen, bar none.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I really enjoy just the direction. That was probably my favorite part.
What did you think when the cliff scene was happening? Could you tell what was going to happen?
I actually already knew what was going to happen.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did. I'm a little bit disappointed that I already knew what was going to happen. But honestly, like, the other two people watching with me were kind of like, oh, this is about to go suicidal.
Yeah.
Not exactly suicidal, but they kind of, they thought of it as like a sacrifice, which I think is kind of the impression that was supposed to be given. And so, that was very disturbing.
It was. It's interesting, though, this one, because of how light it is all the time, right? There's very few scenes in the dark.
Yeah.
This is another one, you know, high content warning. Some very gory violence, some bizarre nudity.
It's so weird. The thing was, is that, like, it's bizarre, but, like, we could not stop laughing because of how weird it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just crazy.
Yeah. Now, a highlight for this one is Florence Pugh is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
She's really, really good, really believable. And it's you almost feel good for her at the end. When she smiles.
Yeah. That's so disturbing too.
Yeah. Like, is she deciding that she's going to stay here and be, you know, held by them, like Pella said to her?
Yeah.
One thing that really bothered me was the way that nobody pronounced his name correctly. None of his American friends said Pella. They either said Pell or Pelly.
Well, I mean, it was probably just nickname.
I guess maybe, but like, come on, Americans, you can find out how people's names are actually pronounced and at least try.
Yeah. The thing that kind of was the weirdest to me was how, I can't remember her boyfriend's name, but Christian. He was like the only one that was, Christian. He was like, you know, it's cultural, you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I would have had an easier time believing that coming from Chidi's character. And by Chidi, I just mean the, from The Good Place, that's his character. I would have had an easier time believing it from him because he was obviously dedicated to doing this thesis on it. And even though Christian's like, oh yeah, I'll do my thesis on it, I had a harder time believing it from him. So that was like my only gripe, is that I felt like some of the characters could have had a little bit of role shifting there.
Yeah. I felt like Christian was the Simon Pegg character from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, just coasting through, not committing to things, even like committing to breaking up with his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a strange one, and it's one where you get to the end and you're like, well, I don't know what it was about exactly. And it's another one where I wonder, am I supposed to take it literally? You know, because then you start thinking about, okay, these people went for a vacation. You know, it's on record where they flew into. Is nobody ever going to figure out what happened? It seems like they would.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
I wonder if it's kind of like the mafia, that they just like wouldn't mess with them because they knew where they went.
Right.
You know, like, oh, yep, that's that cult. We just need to not go there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't help but think that a name like Christian, you know, being the centerpiece of this human sacrifice thing that's happening, there could have been some metaphorical things about the kind of the wars between paganism and Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful film, but very strange and shocking. Mm-hmm.
So, you have also seen Moonlight, which I have not seen.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that one?
I thought it was good. I can't really relate to the story, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Just because it is a kind of story about a gay man's upbringing in a not good place. Just a very poor community. He was abused as a child. And so I think that for me, since it's hard to kind of put myself in those shoes, just because I think that's admittedly an uncomfortable thing for someone to do. It's just, I focused more on the way it was being told. And so I think that the way it is told, it's basically three different sections of his life. It goes from when he's a young kid who almost never comes home. And that's where Mahershala Ali's character kind of nurtures him and mentors him. And then there's a teenage stage in high school where he starts to kind of understand his sexual desires and meets friends, gets bullied. And then in his third stage as an adult, he's gone down this dark path and he's, you know, he's a dealer. So it's just kind of an interesting progression that has a lot of great performances. I can't remember her name now. It's Naomi Harris is wonderful. She's kind of scary because she's a drug addict, but I think she's really good in it. She's, I think, in both part one and two as the mom. And so that was a highlight as well, because I thought she was very compelling, but also scary, which made it a little bit more immersive. Mm-hmm. A solid film with some interesting filmmaking, some great performances, and then just a unique way of telling a story.
Yeah. Well, it might be one that I pick up at some point. Mm-hmm. So then the two that I've seen that you haven't, I saw Lady Bird on a plane when I was flying back from Austin, ironically enough. And it's a good movie. That's the thing. Looking down this list, I'm like, man, these are all good. There's a great performance from Saoirse Ronan and from Laurie Metcalf, who plays her mother. They're both so good in that movie. Hard to explain what the plot is. I mean, it's kind of a coming of age movie, but it's got some drama and some comedy in it. Good stuff. I recommend it. And then Eighth Grade, which I think you would absolutely hate because of all the cringe, because it's focused on this one character, you know, who's in eighth grade, and she has her own YouTube channel, which, you know, gets singles of views, you know, like two or three views, and but she's committed to still doing it, and she interacts with some of the popular kids and kind of gets taken under the wing of one, and you're always wondering, is there an ulterior motive here? What's going on? But so Eighth Grade, definitely a unique film. The perspective there, it reminded me of being a young person and being, you know, a little nerdy, although I was always into sports too, so I didn't have, you know, I never had any trouble making friends. I didn't have any trouble fitting in with my little group. And I was totally happy to be in my little group and, you know, not pressing to be more popular than I was. It was interesting to watch as a parent. Your mom and I watched that one together and just mm-hmm. think about what it'd be like to be that girl's father. So, but yeah, still also a very good movie and a great lead performance. I can't remember the actress's name, but she's really good. So we can sum up here, maybe say what our favorites or, you know, top three out of this were.
For me, I think the favorite is going to be The Lighthouse, just because I think it has a great mix of score, acting, cinematography, direction, and just overall weirdness that makes it unique. Other one, I'm probably Midsummer and Good Time. I think that Midsummer, a similar kind of thing to The Lighthouse, I think it's just insanely well directed and great cinematography, great acting, even though it's not exactly, I can't really have a tangible explanation of what it is. I think it's just, I have a lot of respect for the filmmaking. And then Good Time, I also have a lot of respect for the filmmaking, but I also think that it's just a more compelling story. Yeah. With kind of more, it's entertaining, but not in the way that like popcorn action is. It's entertaining because you can't take your eyes off the screen because it's so intense and so nerve-wracking. And I choose that over Uncut Gems just because I prefer the performances and I think that it's more compelling. But Uncut Gems will probably be my next one.
Okay.
Either that or Ex Machina.
Hmm. So I think I'll agree with you, The Lighthouse, just on, you know, a pure film standpoint. It's the kind of story that you can tell, even though there's not a lot of clear story to it. But the visual is what's important, right? And the way it's telling the story visually makes it really, really compelling. And then I'd probably go Ex Machina. And that's one that I need to watch again. But I really did enjoy it. And it's mostly because of the performances of Ava and whoever Oscar Isaac was playing. Caleb. Mm-hmm. No, not Caleb.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Where's Nathan?
And I actually thought Donald Gleason was fine as Caleb. I just wish he had just kept his Irish accent. There's no reason that he had to be American. Yeah. And then I'd probably go Good Time.
Yeah.
As well. So when we were texting back and forth about what episode to record, you were like, let's do a debate you know, Good Time versus Uncut Gems, I'm like, I'm not sure we have an argument there because I think I like Good Time better than Uncut Gems.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have an argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd have to get Peter on here because I think he prefers Uncut Gems.
Oh, really?
Actually, I don't know if he's seen Good Time.
Hmm. Well, so what I'd like to propose is that we do a follow-up episode where we look through the list of A24 films and come up with a couple more to check out.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones I'm thinking of, I would like to do Green Room, which is, I think it was Anton Yelchin's final film, or one of them anyway. And it's got Patrick Stewart as a Nazi. So that would be interesting. And I'd also kind of like to watch Mississippi Grind, just because I know it's available. Can't remember if it's Netflix or Amazon Prime. But, you know, I really like Ben Mendelsohn. So Definitely like to do those two.
Yeah. I actually was thinking mid-90s as well because...
Okay. Jonah Hill?
Yeah, Jonah Hill directed it. And even though Jonah Hill is normally a comedic actor, mm-hmm. I have also seen a lot of stuff with him. And he truly loves filmmaking. And so I want to see his vision.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind also... I mean, I kind of want to see The Witch, but I'm not sure mm-hmm. I can handle it.
With Anya Taylor-Joy?
Yeah. Yeah, and Swiss Army Man, which I've heard is a very interesting movie. And what was the other one? It Comes at Night. That's another one where I'm like, can I do it?
Yeah, I've heard that one actually isn't that scary. It's just kind of thrilling. And so mm-hmm. I think we'll be fine with that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's also The Disaster Artist and A Ghost Story and Room and The Florida Project. So a lot of, they've got a lot of films that end up on the shortlist for Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I guess we can decide offline which ones of those we want to do. And then we could reconvene in a week or two and follow up on those.
Indeed.
Indeed. Anything else to say?
No, I guess if you guys, the listeners, want to recommend any A24 films that you've seen, let us know. And if you also have seen some of these, let us know what you think. Because we think these are some great films and we want to hear your guys' input too.
Yep. And you can tweet at us at Brief Not So Brief or at Hugo's Podcast. This is the one I check most of the time. So you can do it there. And I always retweet our episodes out in that feed. And we'll do this again because it's nice to talk to my kid, even if he's out of state now.
Indeed.
Okay. I think that'll do it. Thanks for doing this, Ethan.
Yep. Thanks for doing it.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.